This is the Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com. You can call us at 440-579-2531. Send us an email at studio at sportstalknetwork.com or follow us on Twitter at sportstalknet. The Steve Callis Show on sportstalknetwork.com starts now.
Hello again, everybody. This is Steve Callis on The Steve Callis Show. It's Monday, July 23rd, 2012. I encourage you to send your emails to studio at sportstalknetwork.com. That's S-T-U-D-I-O at sportstalknetwork.com. Got a lot to do today, but we're going to start with the NCAA out of Indianapolis with an announcement today on the penalties for Penn State as a result of the Jerry Sandusky sexual abuse, and frankly, more towards the cover-up by Joe Paterno and others, as found in the Louis Free Report, and the NCAA, not surprisingly, came down very hard. There's a bigger picture here, and there's some due process issues here, but the penalties for Penn State, and I agree with the people who think maybe they would have been better off getting the death penalty for 1 year, but now no death penalty for Penn State. Some people think that's good for the program. I'm not so sure, because here are the penalties. A $60 million fine for the institution, which according to Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, is approximately equivalent to the gross revenue generated by the football program for 1 year. A four-year postseason ban. Significant reduction in scholarships. They're capped at 65 scholarships. Essentially, they can only sign 15 kids a year as opposed to 25 per year. The players who are on the team now can transfer immediately without penalty. And again, these players who are there now are really getting the shaft, because if you're not a star, I mean, I think you're talking maybe 5-10 players tops who will have the ability, and I mean the playing ability, to go somewhere else now and play. They can transfer immediately without penalty. Anybody can transfer immediately without penalty. If you don't transfer and don't want to play football, you will still get your scholarship to Penn State. But these have, I mean, this raises, these are unprecedented, and this is an unprecedented case, so you certainly can argue that the unprecedented penalties are warranted. I'm not arguing with that, but the NCAA has just taken the Free Report, which was commissioned and paid for by Penn State, as essentially a Penn State document, essentially saying this is their due process. They hired Louis Free. He made these findings that everybody, including Joe Paterno, all the higher-ups, the president, the athletic director, the vice president in charge of campus affairs, and Joe Paterno all covered this up. And they had pretty good evidence of this. But now those people, who are all of whom are no longer there, Joe Paterno obviously passed away earlier this year, but the other three are no longer at Penn State. As usually happens in these situations, it's the kids who stick around, or the new coaching staff, or even the students in the institution who are really going to be hurt by this. But the bigger picture for a lot of people is the NCAA, essentially without a hearing, and again, their answer is going to be Louis Free had the hearing, can give these unprecedented penalties. Now, Penn State has already announced they're not going to appeal. And forward-looking, it's going to be a disaster. Penn State plays in the Big Ten. They don't play in some weak conference. It's not the SEC, but it's still an excellent football conference. And Penn State, with a four-year postseason ban with a reduction in scholarship. And again, this is not about whether they can compete or not. They can't compete for the next 4 years. They won't compete. They're going to get hammered left and right. But there's going to be a lot of debate back and forth. Was this too soft? Was this too hard? But already I've heard people say, oh, it could have been worse. They could have got the death penalty. I'm not so sure if that would have been worse for Penn State. The other issue, of course, Joe Paterno, who I'm sure you know by now, had his statue was removed from Penn State. The president, Rodney Erickson, I thought made an intelligent statement about that. It's a polarizing statue now. For the public safety, we're removing it. They're leaving Joe Paterno's name on the library. Again, you hate to wipe out 60 years with an ongoing cover-up that this guy participated in. But a lot of that, certainly his legacy is tarnished forever. And and that statue was removed yesterday. They put up a tarp so you couldn't see them taking it away, but they took it away. And that's also happened yesterday. But also, Joe Paterno's, all of Penn State's wins were vacated from 1998 to 2011. And again, I'm not saying this is apples and oranges. I don't really care whether they vacate wins or not. Joe Paterno is no longer the winningest coach in history. Now, a lot of people will say it's like when Michigan was in the Final Four and that was vacated, or Marcus Camby took UMass to the Final Four and that was vacated. You know, what does that really matter? Joe Paterno won the games he won, but officially he is no longer the winningest coach in the history of NCAA. Eddie Robinson from Grambling now is the winningest coach. Paterno's numbers, I think, go into the high 290s. I think it was like 109 or 111 wins were vacated. But the bigger picture is the NCAA flexing their muscles, showing that they can take these actions in an unprecedented way, in an unprecedented case for sure. But Penn State will suffer far beyond the four-year postseason ban. And again, you can argue that they should, but a lot of innocent people are going to be hurt here. A lot of innocent Penn State players, teachers, coaches, students, alumni. But when you weigh that, I guess, against what the victims have gone through, because this it seems at a minimum this could have been reported to authorities and maybe stopped as early as 1998. You don't know what would have happened if the authorities were notified in 1998, because clearly they decided not to notify the authorities. And we talked about this before. Joe Paterno denied knowing anything about this 1998 incident where a 30-page report was filed by the Penn State Police. And I remember writing an article that's still up at SportsTalkNetwork.com, saying, you know, it's hard to believe Joe Paterno. It was a credibility issue at the time. Now there seems to be lots of evidence, emails, conversations back and forth about Joe Paterno's effect and influence on the decision not to report that first 1998 incident, where you'll recall Sandusky wound up in the mother's living room apologizing to the mother while there were detectives in the next room listening in. So clearly everybody knew at the time he had done something wrong. It only got worse when Mike McQuarrie in 2001 or 2002, he changed years during his testimony, saw Sandusky raping a 10-year-old boy in the shower, or someone who looked like they were 10 in a Penn State shower. So clearly, Paterno knew about it, the president knew about it, the athletic director knew about it, vice president in charge of police of campus activities knew about it, and they decided there was a conscious decision to cover it up. And it appears from the emails that Joe Paterno was the leader in that, because the other guys were going to report it to authorities, and then after a conversation with Joe Paterno, they didn't. So it's a horrific thing, what happened to these kids, and it's a horrific thing, not as bad, of course, but a horrific thing what's going to happen to Penn State. Nobody cares about the institution now. You know, Penn State can rally around themselves. I don't know what Jay Paterno, the son's going to say. You know, I didn't think he had a leg to stand on when he stood up when the report came out and said, oh, everybody knows, anybody who knows Joe Paterno knows he wouldn't do that. Well, the evidence shows otherwise. And Penn State has agreed not to appeal. They're going to take their lumps, but I don't think they're going to be bad for 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 years. And again, compared to what the victims went through, it doesn't matter whether Penn State's good or bad as a football program. And everybody viewed Penn State football to be Joe Paterno. Nobody knew what was going to happen, even if he had gotten out cleanly, if you will, even if he had done nothing wrong, even if his legacy remained intact. But now they're going to be bad for 4, 5, 6, 7 years. Bill O'Brien, the new coach, issued a statement. He knew things were going to be bad. He's committed to the program forward-looking. But they're really going to take their lumps. SMU, the only school back in 1987 to get the death penalty. Penn State could have been the second. They decided not to again. I'm not sure which is worse. There seems to be an undercurrent now of people, and I'm in that undercurrent, to think the death penalty, if you just eliminated everything for 1 year and started up fresh after 1 year, they might be better off, because these scholarship reductions for 4 years, can't play in a bowl for 4 years. Who's coming to Penn State next year? What top recruit is coming to Penn State next year? or the year after, or this year. I think they said there was some high-level defensive back who had committed to Penn State who decommitted after hearing this today. If you're a star high school player, why would you go to Penn State this year or next year? You could argue at least he can make a pitch. If you're going to be a freshman in 2 years and there's only 2 years left in the band, you know, come build something. But that's going to be some sales job because Penn State is always going to have this asterisk. Joe Paterno is always going to have this asterisk. So the NCAA hammers Penn State. Big Ten jumping on board said, you know, they're ineligible to play in the Big Ten championship game for 10 years, for 4 years, obviously. Nor will they get any bowl revenue for the next 4 years. That's estimated as a total of $13 million for the 4 years. So, yes, they're being hit financially, as they should be. No, they shouldn't be allowed to play in the Big Ten championship game, because if they won, they couldn't go to the postseason anyway. So they really dropped the hammer on Penn State, as they should. But a lot of kids, innocent kids, are going to be hurt. Now, the people who side with the victims say, who cares? That's nothing compared to what happened to the kids, and they're right. But the bigger picture, I think, is the now almost unprecedented power of the NCAA to come out there and just drop the hammer on these guys. Should they have been given some kind of due process, some kind of ability? Well, I don't know if they agreed that the Louis Freeh report was Penn State's position. But Penn State has already announced they're not going to appeal. They're trying to maintain their academic status as a top academic institution. Another interesting question as to whether or not they'll be able to maintain a top academic school. And I don't know where you think Penn State is in the overall scheme of academics, but it's not one of the top, top universities, certainly, but it certainly is viewed to be a very good to excellent academic institution. How will they suffer now? Remains to be seen. Switching gears now, the other big story, British Open. Adam Scott seemed to be in control, but he bogeys the last four holes of the British Open. Ernie Els, who was in the clubhouse before Scott, obviously Adam Scott playing on the last pair, Ernie Els birdies the last, birdies 18, goes in 7-under for the tournament, and Adam Scott goes from 2-under to 3-under to 4-under, I'm sorry, 9-under to 8-under to 7-under to 6-under. He bogeys the last four holes, and Ernie Els wins his second British Open, his fourth major. Adam Scott couldn't make a putt when he had to. Falls again from 9-under to 6-under on the last four holes for the tournament, trying to win his first major, but he was unable to hold on. Now, Ernie Els, a classy guy, 42 years old by his own admission, quote, lost, close quote, 1 year ago. But he said he spoke to Adam Scott. Scott, only 32 years old, a lot of talent. He's going to win majors. A lot of it depends on how you handle this adversity. Els told him not to take it hard and thought he was handling it well. Ernie Els, a classy guy, said, I know Adam Scott's going to win a couple of these, holding up that claret jug that you get for winning the British Open. But Adam Scott collapses on the last four holes of a major, going 4-over for the last four holes to lose by one stroke. Had he made one par in those last four holes, there would have been a playoff. Of course, you would like Ernie Els in a playoff. But Els finishes the British Open at 7-under to win his fourth major and his second British Open. Adam Scott finishes second. Tiger Woods, again, seemingly in contention. He's always kind of in contention, maybe, but as we've discussed for the last year and a half, I just don't think Tiger Woods has that whatever view of life, desperation, on the edge. I've talked about this before and having nothing to do with golf, just his approach in life, where he used to have a girl in every port. He was probably living in fear of being captured or in fear of being found out, always had the adrenaline going, was able to play on an incredibly high level for an incredibly long time. But since that stopped, where he said he got healthier and his swing got better and he's got a new caddy and he's got a new coach and he's won a few tournaments, I think he's a guy, as we've discussed, who can win a major sometimes, maybe, but he's not Tiger Woods. Yesterday, shoots 73, had to shoot a 69 to force a playoff with Els. Shot 70 on Saturday to be in the mix. But Tiger Woods, again, goes backwards. Now, look, Tiger Woods has never come from behind to win a major. That'll be a knock on him. I certainly thought he was on his way to being the greatest golfer ever. I thought he was easily going to beat Nicklaus before he ran into that fire hydrant. But since he's come back, he's just not Tiger Woods. And people want him to be Tiger Woods, and they're hoping. And he won Arnie's tournament, and he won Jack Nicklaus's tournament, and he won his own tournament. But it's one thing to win tournaments. It's another to win majors. Tiger has 14. He's going to have to wait some more for his 15th. And again, you have so many young golfers who now don't fear Tiger Woods. You have so many guys who hit it farther than Tiger Woods does now. He just doesn't have that walk on the course and win the tournament. So Tiger Woods takes himself out of it by shooting 73. Ernie Els wins the British Open. Again, his fourth major, his second British Open. Adam Scott will have to come back from this. He bogeys the last four holes, finishes second at 6 under. This is the Steve Callis Show. We're at SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Every day, nearly 3,000 families enter into foreclosure and face losing their home. If you're currently behind on your mortgage, you can still avoid foreclosure. You can save your home, but you need to act now. We're Allied State Foreclosure Services. We're experts in saving homes from foreclosure. With just one phone call to us, you can stop the foreclosure process, lower your monthly mortgage payments, and save your home. Call now. The call is free with no obligation. 1-800-603-8308. Call us if you've been threatened with foreclosure, denied loan modification, or missed a payment on your mortgage. If you've been a victim of a predatory loan or are upside down on your mortgage, even if you've lost your job and you're worried about losing your home, don't wait. Call us now and let us help you save your home. You've worked hard to build a life with your family. Let us help you keep your home. Call now before it's too late. 1-800-603-8308. 1-800-603-8308. 1-800-603-8308.
With nearly 30 years of experience in the electrical surplus and distribution business, Supply Line Electric has now taken its business onto the internet with a completely automated website for inventory control and order entry. Specializing in Square D, Eaton Cutler Hammer, Siemens Automation, Banner Engineering, ASCO Valves, Bussmann and Faraz Fuses, and coming very soon are more than 5,000 line items of Allen Bradley. SupplyLineElectric.com, your 24/7 distributor of electrical, motor control, and automation parts.
Follow your favorite NFL team all season long on SportsTalkNetwork.com. Team news, injury updates, game previews, and recaps are updated 24/7. SportsTalkNetwork.com. Your teams, your city, your passion. Blue Zoo Radio with Frank Reese. Sunday nights at 8 p.m. only on SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 877-509-MY-TV.
The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. So, disable the cable and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money.
Call 877-509-MY-TV.
Right now, to sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99 and up to 4 rooms. And there's no equipment to buy. That includes your free HD TV upgrade, your free DVR upgrade, and your free professional installation. And the best part? The pristine digital picture and sound.
Call 877-509-MY-TV.
So, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit
card. Call 877-509-MY-TV. 877-509-MY-TV.
Disable the cable, cut costs, and get more.
Call 877-509-MY-TV. 877-509-MY-TV.
Welcome back to the Steve Callis Show on SportsTalkNetwork.com.
Yeah, back on the Steve Callis Show. Going to get to the baseball scores in a minute. But first, yesterday, overshadowed, frankly, by everything else, the Hall of Fame inductions, I've never quite understood. They have the Hall of Fame inductions when they have a full schedule of Major League Baseball. I guess because it's a Sunday and the people who actually want to go there can get in there for the weekend. I wish it would be like on a Monday on an off day, but again, I guess it is what it is. Yesterday, Barry Larkin inducted into the Hall of Fame. Ron Santo, if you're going to have Ron Santo win, to me, too late. The guy died a year ago. He was very sick with diabetes for a very long time, still was an announcer for the Cubs, the longtime Cub great. But 1 year after his death from diabetes, the Veterans Committee votes him in, and he's inducted yesterday. Actually, his wife gave an excellent speech, if you heard any of the excerpts. You know, you can debate whether Ron Santo is a Hall of Famer or not. I've said for years they should just allow one guy in every year. If they had done that back in 1939 when this started, you'd never have the conversation, is this guy a Hall of Famer? But Ron Santo finally gets into the Hall. Certainly, again, if you're going to let him in, it would have been nice to let him in when he was alive. But his wife did give an impassioned plea about diabetes and diabetes research. Santo did raise a lot of money. He was beloved in Chicago by the Cub fans, was an excellent player, was a homer announcer. Larkin, shortstop for Cincinnati Reds, of course, won a championship, now works at ESPN. Interestingly, you know, he hit just under 300 for his career. 2,300 hits, 379 stolen bases, excellent shortstop. But interestingly, at least from my perspective as a guy who thinks Pete Rose should absolutely be in the Hall of Fame, Larkin gave a very nice speech and thanked Pete Rose, his first manager in the major leagues. Rose gave Larkin his cleats, Rose's cleats, to wear the first day. Apparently they fit him his first day as a major leaguer, and he thanked Pete Rose, and of course it's probably the last thing Bud Selig wants to hear in the Hall of Fame induction speech. But Larkin was entertaining as well. Apparently when he was a kid he could have gone to football. He did have a football scholarship to Michigan when Bo Schembechler was there, but then when he was redshirted he didn't play that much. He decided to go the baseball route, and obviously he picked the right sport as he is inducted into the Hall of Fame. Now, the interesting stuff with the Hall of Fame is going to be next year. First time Barry Bonds, first time Roger Clemens, first time Sammy Sosa. I don't think Sammy Sosa has any chance to get into the Hall of Fame. Bonds and Clemens, I don't think they're going to get into the Hall of Fame early on. I think you can make a separate case for them. That's for another time. Other guys who have a chance next year, Craig Biggio, Mike Piazza, Curt Schilling. You know, it's going to be fascinating next year, and there's going to be a lot of debate next year. But, again, we'll leave that for another day. Barry Larkin in, Ron Santo in, Biggio, Bonds, Clemens, Piazza, Schilling, Sosa. That's for next year. Let's get to the baseball scores now. American League, the Oakland A's serve notice that they're not to be messed with, frankly. They sweep the Yankees. They've got some good young pitching, the A's. They're playing great now. They beat the Yankees in Oakland four games by one run, two in extra innings. Yesterday, Yankees have the lead 4-3. Then in the bottom of the ninth, Soriano gives up a home run, a game-tying home run to Seth Smith, his 11th of the year. And then Oakland wins the game in the bottom of the 12th. Oakland 5, Yankees 4. Coco Crisp, who of course used to be with the Red Sox, gets that game-winning hit in the bottom of the 12th, drives in the game-winning run. Brandon Inge hits a home run, his 10th. Smith is 11th. Kurt Suzuki, his first of the year. Granderson hits his 26th for the Yankees, but Oakland sweeps the Yankees. Oakland 51-44, right in the thick of things now. Yankees 57-38, still a comfortable lead in the East. Blevins gets the win in relief. He's 3-0. Epley takes the loss. He's 0-2. Tigers take over first place from the White Sox over the weekend. Tigers 6, White Sox 4. Quinton Berry hits his second home run of the year. Brendan Bosch hits his 11th, and Miguel Cabrera hits two home runs, his 22nd and 23rd. And again, I think Cabrera is far and away the best hitter in baseball, hitting 330, 23 home runs, 79 RBIs. Tigers 6, White Sox 4. Turner gets the win. He's 1-1. Phil Humber takes the loss. He's 4-5. Benoit gets the save. Tigers have pulled in front of the White Sox. And again, this is kind of what you were expecting in the AL Central. The Sunday night national game last night, Rangers in Los Angeles to play the Angels. The Angels get the win yesterday. Angels 7, Rangers 4. Pujols hits his 18th homer of the year, two-run shot. Wilson hits his first of the year. Nelson Cruz hits one out for Texas, his 12th of the year. Herron gets the win. He's 7-8. Matt Harrison takes the loss. He's 12-5. Rangers drop to 56-38. Angels move up to 52-44. Obviously, Angels still 5 games behind the Texas Rangers. Toronto up in Boston hammer John Lester and the Red Sox. Toronto 15, Boston 7. Brett Laurie leads off the game with his 9th of the year. Aaron Sibbia and Davis hit back-to-back home runs. It's 5-0 after one inning. Travis Snyder hits a home run. John Lester, 9 hits, 11 earned runs, 4 home runs. Just a disaster for Boston. Toronto 15, Boston 7. Switch now quickly to the National League. The Nationals beat the Braves 9-2. Nationals still in first place, 3.5 game lead over the Braves. Detweiler gets the win. He's 5-3. Juergens takes the loss. He's 3-4. Nationals 9, Braves 2. Ryan Zimmerman hits 2 home runs, his 13th and 14th of the year for the Nationals. Nationals still in first place in the AL East. We'll get to the standings in a sec. The surprising Pirates now 14 games over 500. Hard to believe. They shut out the, I don't want to say hapless Marlins, but the certainly very disappointing Marlins. Pirates 3, Marlins nothing. Carstens was unbelievable. 7 innings pitched, 5 hits, no runs. He's 3-2 now with a 3.52 ERA for the Pirates. Sanchez takes the loss. He's 5-7. Hanrahan gets his 28th save of the year for the Pirates. Who would have thought it? Pirates 3, Marlins nothing. Cardinals shut out the Cubs behind Lynn. Cardinals 7, Cubs nothing. Matt Holliday hits his 16th, and Beltran his 21st back-to-back for the Cardinals as they sweep the Cubs. Arizona beats the Astros 8-2. Jason Kubel hit 3 home runs Saturday night, as I'm sure you know. He hit another one yesterday. Chris Young also hit one. The Reds beat the Brewers 2-1, and if you saw, Johnny Cueto gets his 12th win, but this was fascinating. Wilson Valdez singles home a run in the third, and then Mike Byers tries to pick off Valdez at first, throws it away. Valdez goes from first to third. And then scores on a sack fly. Those are the Reds' only 2 runs, but it hold on. Reds 2, Brewers 1. The Reds now 8-2 at home in their last 10 starts. Phillies come back finally to beat San Francisco 4-3. Nate Scherholz hits 2 home runs for San Francisco, but John Mayberry Jr. hits 2 home runs off of Barry Zito. In the 12th inning, Jimmy Rollins hits a walk-off single. Phillies 4, San Francisco 3. And finally, the Mets in a free fall lose to the Dodgers in 12 innings. Dodgers 8, Mets 3. Dodgers score 5 runs in the top of the 12th. Matt Traynor with a key 2 RBI single in the 12th. That was really your main hit. Quickly at the standings now, the Yankees, despite losing 4 in a row, still with a 6-game lead over Baltimore. Tampa 8.5 back. Toronto and Boston still in the mix, 9 and 9.5 out respectively around the 500 level. Detroit has gone by Chicago. They're up a game and a half, 52-44, a game and a half on the White Sox, 4.5 on Cleveland. KC and Minnesota way out of it. Texas 56-38 with a 5-game lead over the Angels. Oakland now with this incredible streak, 9 of their last 10. They're 5.5 games behind Texas. Seattle out of it. Over in the National League, the Nationals still with a 3.5 game lead over Atlanta. Mets now starting to drop out of it. They're below 500, 8.5 out. Miami 11.5 out. Philly 14 out. I just don't think Philly's got their players back now, but my goodness, they're they're so far behind, 42 and 54 in the Central. Cincinnati, 55 and 40, a half game ahead of the surprising Pirates. St. Louis, five out, then far back to Milwaukee, the Cubs, and Houston. Finally, in the NL West, San Francisco, 53 and 42, with a game and a half lead over the Dodgers. Arizona, trying to stay relevant, six out, far back to San Diego and Colorado. The National ESPN game tonight, Red Sox at Rangers, 7 o'clock Eastern on ESPN. This is the Steve Kallis Show, or at SportsTalkNetwork.com.